This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
And I know you're only human, and I haven't got talking room. But tonight, while I'm making excuses, some other woman is making love to you. Will this night be through? Wanna hear the breaking glass? I wanna feel the steel of the red hot truth. And I'd do anything to get it out of my mind. I need some insanity, that temporary kind. Tell me how will I ever be the same when I know that that woman is whispering.
Somebody bring me some water. The program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Houston, Galveston, and the world. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude for Friday, April 7th. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Now, you can't go back saying we did that we're calling the show on Saturdays right now because, you know, last week we did last week's show was the fifth Friday show.
Yes, I can.
If you keep being inconsistent like that, I'm going to call you a Republican.
Hey.
My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one.
He's dressed so I love the 80s right now. He's got on cargo shorts and a sleeveless shirt.
I worked out. I didn't have time to change. Get over it.
All he needs is a bandana around his head and one around his thigh, and it's like...
I forgot them.
He just couldn't remember what colors he needed to wear.
Oh, I always know what colors, yes.
Yeah, that's why he believes in the rainbow. Just, you know, puts them all in the back pocket and you choose. Jimmy Carper, inventor of the chameleon hanky. Whatever you are, he's got it.
Uh-huh. So, what music did we hear?
Some reason he pulled women out of the box. We started off with Melissa Etheridge, Bring Me Some Water.
And that's, well, because it's... That is one of the earliest requested songs by Melissa Etheridge. In fact, it was requested a lot before she came out. It's on, I believe, her first or second album.
Yeah, speaking of I Love the 80s, look at that pose.
Yeah. Well,
if she was on her knees, it would be like a Star Search moment.
That's back from 1988. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that explains the feathered hair.
There you go. Anyway.
They didn't know she was lesbian with that hair.
Anyway, I went to a show tonight, an ICOH show, called Back to Africa, because our emperor, Mark Cohen, is going off to Botswana tomorrow.
Botswana.
That too.
You said Botswana. That's,
well,
that's a totally different place.
Well, that's where Mark's going. No. Mark works with AIDS Foundation Houston, and he's going over there because they're having their Camp Hope for children with HIV.
Did you ask him the questions I asked you last week?
No.
You didn't? Did you even remember the questions I asked last week?
No.
Oh.
That was last week. I've slept.
Well, no, about, you know, taking African kids camping. It's like taking kids from River Oaks and going to a hotel.
No.
That sort of thing?
No, I didn't go there with him. No. Anyway.
You went elsewhere with him.
It was called Back to Africa, and Rose Smith happened to do this song tonight, and I thought, wow, I haven't heard that in a long, long time. I also have another version of it where Melissa does a duet with Joan Osborne, which is really, really hot.
Yeah, I actually have been singing Melissa, one of Melissa's songs has been going through my head all week now.
Oh, here we go.
No, just come to my window.
Oh.
It's just, it's...
She wished.
And they, well, they've been coming to his door, I'm sure.
No. It's not that kind of a hotel.
Yes, it is.
Yet. Not for lack of trying.
Okay, and the second song we did was...
Candy Cane.
Yes.
I Could Fall for You.
Nice bluesy number. Nice bluesy number. So I
well, considering
thought,
you wrote bluesy next to it, I assume it is bluesy.
Well, that was for people like you who are not familiar with her music. And you see, I can underline it and let you know kind of what kind of tempo. And
Yeah. He used a pink highlighter on a CD cover that's pink.
I can see it. I can't. You know, so you're red colorblind, whatever. Anyway. Thought we'd start out with a lesbian and a bisexual woman. Yes?
So?
Well, okay.
They expect me to make a comment.
No, I don't.
I get dirty looks
much.
For you. Anyway. Oh, don't worry. The feeling's mutual.
Yes. Speaking of things going on in the neighborhood, tomorrow... show presented by Jerry DeWeese, who is the boy of Montrose, and is benefiting the PWA Holiday Charities. It's called A Night in Hollywood, hosted by Bob Boughton and Channel 11 news anchor Lisa Ferranda. It's happening Sunday, April the 9th at 7 p.m. at The Burb, the BRB. It's a community show for all, and entertainers are welcome. Music from the movies and glitzy attire are encouraged. That ought to be fun. Especially with Bob and Lisa. They're fun.
I know. I saw one of Bob's performances there at the Louis Show
shows. Oh, yeah. So that's going to be fun. And Monday the 10th, 7 p.m. at Mary's, is Cartier's Cabaret and Show. That's dinner and show by the female line of ICOH. And, of course, Wednesday and every Wednesday is the Jukebox Show at Mary's at 9-ish.
More-ish than 9.
Yeah, no kidding. And let's see, hopefully next Friday night we'll have an evening with the Royals. That will be, one Royal anyway, because Marcus is going to be in Africa, but we expect Chanel Cartier to be here representing ICOH. And 16th is Easter, Bunnies on the Bayou. And many beneficiaries, including ICOH, the Lexi Bowen Fund, and the Lazarus House, which is why you see me dressed this way, because that's where I've been.
Are you sure? Oh, great. Now you're going to make me turn against Lazarus House.
What? This is a great place. I get to work out.
Yeah, but
out.
If you're going to wear like that around.
Well, I didn't intend to. This is workout clothes, and I just, you know.
Thank goodness he doesn't have yellow shorts.
Oh, God.
Yes? Can I help you? You've called.
Yes, I know. Anyway.
He calls my name, and then
anyway, Bunny's on the Bayou. Let's see. What else? What have you got? I had a bunch of stuff that I left home in the commuter.
The commuter?
Computer.
We need to get some Fixit in here. Ah, that was Marisa's stuff.
And seal his mouth shut.
That requires super glue.
You would get too many. I get too many complaints on that.
They just use the other end.
Well, let's see. Is that patently or not?
No. Yeah. Can't get me on that one. Don't you have a little promo that you need to play?
Well, we're going to do that in a second. I got to find these other ads here. Unfortunately,
ads?
Well, it's the flyers that they send out. And unfortunately, they always send the stuff out as just an attachment. Don't write the information. So I have to download the picture.
That was tonight, so forget it.
That's already happened. So
that was the Dykey Diva show over at Chances.
See, all that time, and it didn't.
Yeah, see?
People give me that wrong information. All right. Here's one for May 6th. How's that sound?
That works.
That work for you?
Yeah.
I'm going to get to the good stuff. I'll just read the whole damn thing. What the hell?
Yeah.
I'll have a Roy moment. Good afternoon to all of Houston's surrounding counties. As I sit looking out my window, I can't help but see all of nature's glory.
This is from Jim Crawford, isn't it?
Possibly.
Okay.
Why?
That just sounds like him.
The trees are sprouting their new foliage. Lovebirds are chirping a lovely tune. Flowers are being...
pollinated.
Beginning to pop their little buds.
Oh.
Typo. Through the soil.
Ooh.
And the men are starting to wear little or nothing in the way of clothes. Wow, it must be spring. His Highness Imperial Prince Jim Crawford presents Mayflowers Are in Bloom, a garden party. On Saturday, May 6th at Keys West from 7 to 9 p.m. Benefiting Legacy Community Health Services, Body Positive, and Camp and AFH Camp Hope.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, May 2nd. If you want to participate, contact Jim Crawford. You should know.
Yeah.
I think it's the only one.
That's the Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star.
Yeah, you're not going to let me talk about that thing. So,
yeah.
All right, let's just do the promo. Let's get
okay.
Because we got a full crowd in there.
Yeah.
You know, last year at this time, we started using the term After Hours Season Finale.
Yeah.
And we told you we didn't know what the hell we were going to do. Well, history repeats itself. On Friday, April 21st, After Hours, we'll be having another season finale.
It's going to be our last show on Friday.
I love the... I was actually thinking about doing the pregnant pause, but I figured you'd hit me for it. We're moving. And just to let you know what's happening, what's going on, we figure we're bringing some royalty to tell you what's happening. And that's right, Saturday night is all right once again. After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude is coming home to Saturday night / Sunday morning, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. So don't forget that starting April 22nd, you can find the entire After Hours crew back home on Saturday night. It's all right. This is KPFT Houston. So you can guess what day we're starting back?
Yeah.
I think we've...
The phone's ringing.
Yeah, so. And the CD's still playing. Continuous single. Turn the damn... Alrighty. Well, we can't answer while we're talking. Go in there. Someone go in there and answer, or I gotta pull you. So, on April 22nd... So here's the... Well, I don't know what's going on. Pick up and talk. I turned your mic off. Okay, he's got him in there. So here's what's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. On Friday, April 21st, we will be here from 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. And then on Saturday, the 22nd, we will be here again, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. And fortunately for us, the way it works out is that the 21st is the third Friday, the 22nd is the fourth Saturday. So we're just going to flow in. We're going to be going with the flow on that. And so Friday the 21st, we will have our third week show, which is Black on Black. And then on the 22nd, we'll have our fourth week show, which is Mistress Max. And so we are very glad that we are coming home to Saturday nights back where we belong. And we hope everyone's going to get the word out and let everyone else know that we are there and where we are going. So I got to grab this bag here, and we'll get a little music in and bring in, because this is the first Friday of the month. So, of course, it is Hatch, followed by Binet. And let's put in this month. I have to think we've played in a little while. Put a little Scott Free in and start bringing in the Hatchlings and get this show started. Ladies and gentlemen, this is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. The artist is Scott Free. The song is Another Day of Cruelty. We'll be right back.
Excuse me, can I have your attention, please? Hey, kids, tired of getting beaten up every day after school. Some at before school, in the hall, and lunch after school. They wait for after classes, smash your glasses in 18 pieces. Rub your face in dog pieces, spit food in your face in the cafeteria. Fill your milk with ammonia so you choke and the whole crowd goes into hysteria. In the hall, they whistle at you, throw kisses at you, proposition you, push you into the bathroom and piss on you. In the classroom, they leave thumbtacks at your chair on the seat, trip you, then drag you down the stairs by your feet. Hang you upside down on the fence over by the soccer field. Drag you naked from a speeding automobile. And all because you're queer. That's right, queer. You heard the magic word, as if an adult come looking fair. They assure you you're not a pervert and you can be cured. Well, if that doesn't work, you prefer to keep it all blurred. They say you must be questioning or confused. While they keep pestering, there's gotta be something to choose. And the pressure gets festering so you can't stand it, you lit a fuse. While they desperately find someone, anyone to accuse. Like it's an abnormality or happened accidentally. Like you can't think intellectually, have the mentality to understand sexuality. Have the capacity or tenacity to think independently. But here's my advice, take it literally.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool and you never have to take another day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules. Just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules. And if you're gonna say them, screw every last one of them. Okay, so you try to go talk to the principal. You know the invisible man, the one that's only doing his job. That says you're the problem with the phone, the slob with this platoon. And the car cop for our brain on the bottom outside. What's the body of your remains? Make a kebab of your cranium. You tell him you documented every time you were bashed. He looks at the papers, takes a folder and throws it in the trash. He says it's time for you to go, and why did you come here? But sir, I can't leave now, they'll throw me in the garbage dumpster. He says he's sick of hearing you rag, and if you didn't act like a fag, well then you wouldn't get beat up so much. You say I'm touched, and thank you very much. I'm sure if I'm surrounded, you'll be there in the clutch. But I don't know if you noticed, but the crowd's getting restless below, and do you mind if I exit through your window? I'll take the fire escape down and run for cover before they just cuff me and start chasing. I can make it to the bus and hide behind the wheel casing.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool, and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna stay, then sue every last one of them. So they catch you one day, pin you to the wall, beat you within an inch of your life. Carve the word faggot into your stomach with a pocket knife. You go to the counselor, show him the gashes. His solution is to put you in special ed classes. So you go to the police, tell them everything that's been happening. You lift up your shirt, show them the scar, they start laughing. They won't make an arrest because it's too much paperwork. You say thanks a lot if you're a safer jerk. So you finally find a teacher who's willing to assist you. Tell the kids boycott the class, say he must be a sissy too. And they transfer you from school to school, and all the administrators can talk about his immunity values.
Just run away to the hobby milk school, and you never have to take another day.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, and if you're gonna say this, sue every last one of them.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and the cows and the rules, just leave this place and you'll never see the face again.
Just run away to the hobby milk pool and you never have to take another day of the cruelty.
The thugs and the fools and
the cows and the rules. And if you're gonna say it, then sue him, but that's one of them.
That's right. Sue the teachers, the principals, the administrators, the school district, the police. Sue the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the dean. Sue them all. Make them pay.
Scott Free from his CD, They Call Me Mr. Free, and that was Another Day of Cruelty. This is After Hours, and I'm just going to kick the mics on. It's all yours.
Alrighty. This is the Hatch segment. We'll start by introducing ourselves. I'm Travis.
Victor.
Freddie.
Jeremy.
Sean.
And I'm Brendan, the adult facilitator for Hatch.
Last week, the show's topic was sort of a sort of a vegetarian take on life. And this month, we're doing a show about gay male relationships. And so, we'll start by, are any of you in a relationship? No?
No.
Okay, that's typical. have any of you ever been in a relationship?
I have.
I have.
I haven't.
You haven't.
I had fun.
Yeah. I did.
Okay.
If you call it a relationship.
Okay. Well, Victor, since you haven't, we'd like to know about like society and the media. What would you say that society and the media portrays them as? Okay, anybody else?
Well, like, okay, the media, it always portrays, like, gay men as, you know, one-night stand kind of people. Like, you know, it's all we want is just sex, and it's not true. You know, some of them, like, really want relationships.
Yeah, I know my experience. Growing up, I lived across the street from a couple who had been together about 25 years, named Bob and Bob, and they were the cutest couple, and so growing up, I really had this, like, rose-colored vision of gay life and what it was, and I thought that, like all people, gay people sort of met, fell in love, got married, and end of story. And then I came out, and it was a lot different. And also, I think society sort of paints gay men as all the same, first of all. And, so, like, how do you think that society, first of all, what would you say is society's image of gay men, Sean?
Basically what he said.
Okay, but I mean, more than just the relationship aspect.
It's just like, I don't know, you see the good clothes, you see all that, you know? But, what?
You know,
I'm trying to process that.
For the longest time, the media portrayed gay couples as being unhappy, not as wholesome, something lacking. It cast a sad shadow on the relationship of two gay men or two lesbians. And I think just in the last 15 years, perhaps, I think the media has shifted a little bit away from that image. And I think we're beginning to see more and more positive role models in the media, and I think the general attitude is turning more in a positive way. But I think there's still a long way to go as far as that goes.
Right. I noticed, and I want to know if y'all agree, like, that even when there were gay characters on shows, none of them really were ever in a steady relationship.
True.
Has anyone ever noticed that?
Well, I mean, it kind of works like, when they're younger, like, they like to go out and party. That's how they portray it. But when they get older, they get tired of doing that, and they want to settle down with somebody. Which is mostly true for some gay couples. That's how they start off. They start off with the party, you know, existent life, and then they move on to, you know, one steady relationship of monogamy and stuff. So,
well, let's look at the gay characters in the media that we have.
Right.
In the relationships. One of the first that started off was Soap. with Billy Crystal.
With Crystal,
era.
Yeah.
And I don't recall. I love soap, and I watched the reruns. That was a great show. Looking back and thinking about it, I don't think I ever remember him in a same-sex relationship.
In the beginning.
In the very beginning.
In the very beginning on soap, he was... I grew up on this show, watching the show.
It was a great show, wasn't
yeah.
it?
For those of you who don't know, it's a takeoff of all soap operas, and it was a comedy. In the beginning, he was a gay man who was in love with the semi-pro football team's quarterback. And at the very start, he was actually going to get a sex change so that he could be out and open with...
Yeah, I remember that now.
...with the character. And eventually, the football guy said, you know, I can't do this, like, and dumped him. So it was only, you know, maybe half a season's worth
right.
that they showed this thing. And then slowly the Billy Crystal character that was gay became straighter and straighter
right.
and straighter. By the end of the show.
Right.
So, I mean, that was the first one I was thinking of when you talk about gay characters and relationships, because, you know, going back on TV shows, there's not a lot that have been there.
No, and that was in the early 70s.
That was the early 70s.
Well, I've always thought that one of the reasons for that was because of the way the media portrays gay people as all flamboyant to at least an extent. And also, usually their portrayal of gay relationships was so stereotypical, butch and femme. And I think it was more complicated for them to get a butch and a femme, but still portray the butch as femme. Because he had to be, because he was gay.
Yeah, 'cause, I mean, going back to the next show that had predominant gay characters in the 80s was a Showtime series.
Brothers.
Yeah. And one of the characters was completely flaming.
Right.
And the other one was more the straight acting, good-looking guy who was the younger brother of a football player and a construction worker.
Right.
And they all owned this bar. And I don't think he ever had a relationship. I mean, if you think Will and Grace shies away from same-sex relationships, Brothers, back in the 80s, they didn't... I don't even remember them having a date or anything. You know, they may have talked about something, but they never showed a relationship sort of thing.
And this was on Showtime, for crying out loud.
Well, what about Queer as Folk?
Well, now we move into more recent times.
You see, Queer as Folk, it displays the lives of gay men. Some of them are in relationships, and some of them can't seem to settle down, and all they do is, like, you know, party, basically.
Yeah, but, I mean, how much of... I mean, okay, so we come up with Queer as Folk in, you know, we're not even going to say, you know, the 60 years of television. Let's just go the 30 years of since cable television, or, you know, the 35 since Stonewall. You know, trying to sit here and rack our minds of television series that portrayed openly gay characters that had relationships.
It's hard to do.
It's hard. I mean, you know, we're pulling up ones from the 70s, late 70s and 80s.
Roseanne, toward the very end when it kind of stank.
Yeah, I mean, Roseanne.
There was the one gay couple that was like someone's brother and his partner.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, Roseanne had several different characters
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, you're right.
Wasn't there
Martin Mull, her boss from the... it was her boss
right.
when she worked at the cafeteria in the mall.
Right.
And
her
actually,
sister.
he had two different boyfriends
no.
in there. Her mother came out as gay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And had a girlfriend towards the end.
And at the end, her sister turned out to be a lesbian, too.
I stopped
the
watching it by
of
then.
The show. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, but all that stuff was, you know, really kind of fleeting. And, you know, we're not really talking about major characters
right.
in there. So, I mean, it's one of those things when you look at it, you know, straight people can have role models on what a relationship is supposed to come from for years on years.
Right.
And, you know, what we're looking at here, we're talking about, you know, Queer as Folk, but then look at, you know, the one relationship,
Brian and Justin.
I mean, Brian and Justin is not an Ozzy and Harriet. It's not an Ozzy and Harriet kind of relationship.
No, it's not.
Hal Sparks' character,
mm-hmm.
you know, he had decent ones, but there was always that problem in there of, you know, the Brian influence.
Yeah, the party.
Of, you know, of that part. I mean, the lesbian couple broke up.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it's one of these things of, you know, when you go through and you may see these characters. Because, like, I remember they were talking about on CSI, the one character that Greg, the one that Eric Sismana plays, was supposed to come out as gay. And then they had to change the storyline because they got rid of a couple of characters for a little while. And, you know, now there's no mention of anything like that.
Right.
This last episode I saw, he was going to a strip club going, woo, I get to see naked women for flashing my badge.
I remember it was rumored that when Star Trek Voyager came out, there was going to be a gay character on Voyager. And of course, there wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like, my thing is, I think that with movies and TV and everything, you've always seen that the gay character is usually the outcast or the best friend of the, you know, the hot chick or anything like that. And really, it's like, you don't see much couples or you don't see them having relationships. It's as if that, since it's media and movies, things that audiences all over America are going to see, you know, be seeing, it's like, who really wants to see that when you think about it, you know? It's like they expect that everyone gay is either closeted or they have their own crowd to hang with, so they have their own movies, but you want to see the straight couple and the best friend,
well,
you know?
I don't know. I think Brokeback Mountain did a lot to change that. And I think movies earlier on and more often portray gay men in more stable, normal, so to speak, relationships.
I think there's a double-edged sword, really, in my opinion, because you have, at least I have, the desire to both see gay characters as just normal supporting characters with their sexuality not integral into the plot line. But at the same time, I want to see a gay character who is in a normal gay relationship. And it's really hard to do both in a movie, you know, without focusing on it and stuff like that. I watched a movie the other day called The History of Violence, where they kept insinuating that a character was gay, but never confirmed, you know, yes or no. And so it's like, partly it's gratifying to see a gay character. But that isn't, you know, showboated around as, look, there's a gay person in our movie. But then at the same time, it was also, like, kind of annoying to see this gay character that they kind of said, well, yeah, he's gay, but we don't want to talk about it too much because then we have something gay. So, I don't know. So, I think moving on, let's talk about how would you say gay relationships are different from straight relationships or lesbian relationships?
That's a tough question.
Really? You think so? I think it's fairly easy.
Look, if you compare gay men and gay lesbians. Women are very understanding of each other, you know, and they think on a different level than men do, and it's been proven they're more emotional. And with men, it's more logic and, like, you know, not as much emotion tied into.
I didn't say that men thought with more logic than women. Just so everyone hears, that was not me.
That was me.
No, but I mean, right. I think, you know, there's the old joke of, on a second, what do lesbians bring on a second date? A U-Haul. And what do men bring on a second date? What second date? Yeah. I mean, because women are more prone to settle down. Men just aren't. And I guarantee you, if straight men could go out and have one-night stands as often as gay men were able to, they would.
Yeah, well, some do. I mean, let's be real.
Right.
they put that down to biology. The fact that when you look in the animal world, the female of the animals, of most animal races, it's the nesting, it's the nurturing, it's building it up. In the animal kingdom, the male, their idea, a concept is to spread their genetic seed as much around to create progeny. And
it's like a shotgun.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, if you shoot at everything, you're bound to hit something.
Yeah. And that's the part of thing of where, you know, that some comes from. That's what they say, the biology, that, you know, there's reasoning for why we do what we do.
Right. Well, okay, think of a straight couple. There's a man and a woman. Okay, or a male and a female. Well, the male's more bound to do what he wants, and he has no problem with that, you know? And the female, she'll be like, oh, I want him home. I don't want him cheating. I don't want him doing this kind of stuff. But he wouldn't have a problem with that. It doesn't, you know, bother him as much as it would bother her. And, well, look at the way, like, I mean, not every gay man, but look at the majority of what you see, you know, around this area and everything. It's like they're doing everything with anybody, and they could still be with each other, but it's not a problem. Because, you know, that's how, you know?
I think, yeah, the whole idea of an open relationship, which a lot of gay men, or not a lot, but enough gay men to make it sort of a subculture in and of itself. Gay men, some gay men are just okay with an open relationship, which to me is just like, I don't understand it. It's a relationship because you're committed to each other and blah, 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 blah. You know, and it's just not my thing. One of the problems I had when I started seriously dating, I dated girls before, because for the longest time, due to the way the media portrayed gay people, I thought, well, I can't be gay because I'm not like that at all. I like sports and I like, you know, stuff like that. So for the longest time, I didn't think I was gay, so I dated girls because that's what guys do. And it was always very clear cut of who did what. You know, guys pay for everything when you go out on a date. Well, then when I started dating other guys, it was this, like, confusion. Because we're both guys, so we can't both pay for everything. I mean, did any of y'all experience that ever?
Yeah, I did, like, the same kind of thing. But it always came down to, like, okay, it's either one's taking care of the other. It's like the same thing in a straight relationship, because you're trying to figure out, okay, we're both guys, so what do we do? You know?
Right.
I think it comes down to who makes the most money.
Yeah.
There was, well, in one of my relationships, there was that. I mean, like, I had more money than he did, so normally I paid. And then, you know, it
or,
was...
Or you go Dutch, so to speak.
You know, yeah, you kind of pay for the, yourself.
Yeah. Or you take turns. Back, I think that's a nice one.
Right. That's what...
Taking turns is nice.
And I always think that whoever asks... If someone asks me out on a date, I expect them to pay. Because it was their idea, they wanted to do it. You know, that's what you do on a date. If you ask someone out, you pay.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I think, and you know, most of my straight friends agree that if a woman asks a man out on a date, she's going to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the... That's the way, I think that's the way our society is moving now, and I think it works just as well in gay couples, because, you know, it's the, I guess you'd say, the fair thing to do.
How do you explain those who've had the bad experiences, or, you know, to where they've given up on, you know, temporarily given up on being with somebody on account of the fact that they won't let somebody pay for them or do anything for them because they see it as, I can, you know, they'll pay for themselves because they think that, oh, if I let him pay for it, you know, he's like, he's going to think that throughout this relationship, or as long as we know each other, he can have it his way and have what he wants, you know?
That's so you're saying control, like, issues.
Yeah, I tend to need to get over it. I mean...
Well, one thing is this. Relationships, is what I feel, it's all about negotiation. And you've got to understand the rules of the game when you start.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something like that comes up, and you go out to the movies, you know, he buys tickets, you go, hurry up and go to the concession stand and say, I'll get the popcorn. You know, I'll get the popcorn and the drink. What do you want? You know, you break things up like that, and then you start having to may have to sit down and talk and say, hey, you know, let's share this, or, you know, you want to go to dinner or a movie, I'll take care of the movies and the snacks, you take care of the movie. You have to have that open dialogue, you know, and that's the important thing, I think, with a relationship. You have to know your boundaries of where you're going with it. So
right. One thing I experienced in a relationship was, and this is going back to sort of the media stereotype of a dominant and a submissive, or a masculine and a feminine. I was always the one driving, and I was always the one paying, and I was always the one making the decisions. And finally, one day, I realized that, like, we had become this, like, almost a man-woman couple. Like, I was the man, he was the woman, and it made me really uncomfortable. And, like, it was one of the things that caused one of the biggest problems in our relationship was, like, his willingness to just be this feminine archetype. And I think that was one of the places where I felt like we should differ from a straight couple. Mm-hmm. Because if I wanted someone who, I don't want to say couldn't make decisions, because not all women can't make decisions, but if I wanted a feminine person, I would be dating a woman.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's put it to the panel here. How many of you think that a relationship should be like a partnership, where if all things are right, that you're equal partners in it, that, you know, that you should have, that you can make suggestions. You don't sit there and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. How many of you think that it's, you know, it should be a partnership?
It really should.
Really should, because dominance is always going to be an issue. Like, you know, it always comes up who's the dominant male, or, you know, maybe they should just, you know, stop and try to equalize it, you know, not be so much, okay, well, this person makes the decisions and this person doesn't. You know what I mean?
So,
yeah.
I don't think there's a cookie cutter answer to that. I think it partly is determined by the dynamics of each of the two people and what they bring to the table. And I think that varies and perhaps should vary with each combination of pairs that you bring together. I mean, there's going to be some where it's a 50-50 partnership and it works for them, and that's great.
Yeah.
And there's going to be others where there is the one that's more dominant and there's the one that's more submissive. Mm-hmm. Whether that is because of basing it on a traditional male-woman, a man-woman relationship, traditional marriage, or whether that's just how the personalities play out.
Right.
Or how about, well, this, since all of you are younger guys, if you're dating someone who's older, do you think that just because a person is older that they should have the complete say in it?
No, not really. But then again, in nature, it's always, between males, it's always the dominant one that goes higher. Like the beta and the alpha male.
Although, you know, I would say, like, there are people out there who date older men because of their
experience?
No, because of their desire to be
basically told.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say submissive, because that just has, like, this whole other context in our culture.
No, I understand where you're coming from, because I was
sort of taken care of, I guess you'd say.
You want someone to explain what to do and all that, and it's not as much with an older-younger thing. I can understand that part. Why don't we step out for a moment? Let's take a little music break, and we'll be right back. Okay.
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 Against all odds, we appear, grew up, brainwashed.
smells like queer spirit. That's Pansy Division. And we're back. Ringing the microphones up slowly on the hatchlings. This is After Hours. Which I got to jump in and tell you in a couple of minutes anyway, but tell you now.
And we're back.
We're back. You're back.
Again, you're listening to Hatch. This is the Hatch segment of the After Hours show. Hatch is a youth group for GLBT and questioning teens ages 14 to
20.
And
right now we're going to give like a view about how we see relationships and what we've been through so far in our lives at our age.
And we're going to start with Sean. Sean's going to tell us about his most recent relationship and what it was like and sort of like why it ended. I mean, like, if you feel comfortable telling us that.
Okay. But what if it doesn't qualify for a relationship? Or how can I see how I say how I feel about just them in general?
Sure.
Okay. Well. Okay. Recent hasn't been recent, but my last, I guess I have to call it a relationship. It was with an older guy, and much older. And, well, I met him, and, you know, I hang out at, a certain place, and, it's, like, a lot of, you know, a lot of older guys hang out there, but I don't hang out there for older guys, just a lot of people in general, you know, of all ages, but I'm the youngest, and, I guess every night I go there, and I just felt like a regular, and, I started hanging out with these older guys, just, you know, I like to hear the stories and all that, and one night, this, person, he just came up to me, we were talking and all that, and, you know, I went home with him, and we just hung out, we didn't do anything, we just hung out and watched movies, and he started bringing up all this stuff about how, and I, you know, he's saying stuff like, you know you're hot. I'm all like, I don't like to see it like that, and he's all like, well, you know, everybody wants that. He's like, and they say stuff about you, it's just because they're mad they can't get it, and he tried to make me, I guess he made me, try to make me feel grateful, or whatever. And, I ended up spending more nights there and hanging out, and, it turned into a kind of control thing, I guess you could say. If I were to go to that place to hang out, you know, I guess he didn't see reasoning for it anymore. He's like, he'd be like, you don't have to hang out there anymore, you got me. It made me feel like as if I went there to meet people, which was, you know, BS, and, he would just, and then he started just ordering stuff and buying stuff and doing all this, and I didn't like that because I felt like he was trying to, he wanted me there often, you know, more and more, and he was just bringing in more material things, thinking it would keep me there, but that's exactly what I didn't want, you know, I didn't want him doing all that, and I felt like I'd have to give something in return. That's not how I wanted to see it. I thought we could actually be cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, I couldn't take anymore. I wasn't seeing my friends. I wasn't going to certain places I used to. I wasn't even seeing my family as much. I was there so much. And if I wanted to go home, he'd be like, what, are you sick of me already? And this had just turned into, you know?
Guilt tripping.
Yeah, and I'd feel, you know, as much as I knew it was wrong, I'd feel bad, you know? And I'd end up, you know, bringing up all my clothes over there, and he washed them all and did all this, and he'd want, you know, just want me there all the time, and if I wanted to take a few clothes home, he'd be like, what, are you leaving now? You know, it was just a guilt trip thing, and then finally it kind of ended, kind of, you know, kind of, there were some issues, and I'm like, kind of,
right,
yeah, and, it just ended real ugly, but that taught me something about, you know,
right,
staying in my age range, I guess you could say, and just,
yeah, because when you date an older person, you know, it tends to be they want somebody with, they're expecting you to have more experience, or, you know, expecting you to do certain things that an older person would do.
See, it's not a matter of what he could have, you know, he made his own choices, did what he wanted. What he wanted. Oh.
Okay. Jeremy?
So. My most recent relationship, I was dating a younger guy. He was 2 years younger than me. By this time I was 18 and he was 16, so you know, I'm an adult, he's a child. That's how his mom put it.
Oh.
You're an adult, he's a child, you don't need to be with him. And so, you know, we worked around that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Life went on, everything was going great. Then, suddenly, I guess his mom was giving him more grief about our relationship, because his mom really doesn't want him to be gay or bisexual, whichever he defines himself as. So, what happened? I don't even remember anymore. He came to the point to where he started questioning his own sexuality. His mom had put it into his head to where he started telling me he didn't know whether he wanted guys or girls. And so I'm like, you know, well, wait a minute now. You know, something's wrong with this picture or whatever. Not to mention that this guy already had a year-old daughter. And, you know, then he's gay and I'm with him, so I'm kind of like, you know, stuck in the middle and...
Stepmommy.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on, just for those that are scoring at home and may have just woken up now. 18, you were dating a 16-year-old who had a 1-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And mom was having trouble with his possibly being gay.
Actually, while we were dating, he was 15. He turned 16 last October after we broke up. That makes it even worse. But, his mom had gone into, you know, she's going to call the police because that was illegal and this, that, and the other. And so, you know, he got on the phone and started calling district attorneys and stuff like that to see what the legalities of our relationship was. And
do you know how old the girl was he knocked up?
She was 20.
Whoa! 20 years old. This proves that youth is just overrated.
Oh!
Means he got this girl pregnant when he was 14. She was 19.
My hypocrite meter just went off the scale.
His mother didn't have a problem with that. That's like way illegal. That's beyond. So,
and there's evidence of that, too.
Our relationship finally ended because he decided that he doesn't know whether he wants guys or girls. I still talk to him very often, and he still acts like he's madly in love with me and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. And once he realizes that he's getting too close to me, he sort of tries to pull himself away. And so I just give him his space, let him do his thing, whatever. That was it.
Before we go into the next story, I have to step in and tell you, you're listening to After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude, here on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. That was to make... be careful saying names out loud. These microphones, I pulled it down in time. I heard you whispering in there.
Oh, sorry.
Not you, him.
Oh, well.
What went over there? Is his name Colt? these microphones are very sensitive, and like I said, because of the setup we have in here with six people and four microphones,
I can't feel my chest.
They are a little loud, and especially when you lean towards him and there's a microphone in between you.
I've never seen George Lopez. So, Freddie, tell us about your most recent relationship.
Yeah, your microphone's back live.
Oh, let's see. I'm very... Okay, this is like going to make me such a stereotypical person, like, because everybody's going to think that. I'm so bad with relationships. I don't know if it's me picking the wrong guys or...
No, honey, it's you being 16.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right. But every time I pick a guy, they either just want, you know... sex, or they just want you for some specific reason, and then they just, you know, forget about you, which is what always happens to me, and it's always it's the type of guy that I always seem to have, like, to get with for some reason, and, you know, it just makes me very upset that I always get guys like that. Like, and I want a relationship, if I, like, get into a relationship, I want somebody that, you know, will treat me nice and likes me for who I am and doesn't just want, you know, something for me and this forgets about me, you know, and the relationship has to be not controlling or just, you know, equal in a way where, you know, we don't even have to worry about, you know, who does this or who does that. You know, it should just be something
that... It should be natural.
Yeah, basically, yeah, natural. It's just a natural occurrence that doesn't have, like, any strings attached or anything. So, that's...
So, tell us about your most recent relationship.
The last guy was... Well, he was older than me, 18, and he basically, all he wanted to do was just, you know, get what he wanted, and then he just basically forgot about me. He shut me out. Slowly, he started doing all the things, you know, just to get my attention and, you know, flatter me, obviously. And slowly, he just started drifting away and forgetting about me, like, pushing me to the side, and, you know, and then we just, like, stopped talking. After a while, and whenever he tries to call me again or talk to me again, I just remind him of how that's all he wanted, and that's all he ever wants whenever he calls me or tries to talk to me, ever. So,
interesting.
Yeah. Well, isn't it nice to know that before you get 2 or 3 years into a dating situation, and it wasn't meant to be anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't keep a relationship for more than 3 months.
Looks
because,
yeah.
Like... I think, and 3 months, I think, is sort of like the probationary period, mm-hmm. where it's like...
It's like the job.
No, I mean, like, after 90 days, it is where you kind of step back, and you go, well, we've done this so far, and I'm going this way, and our relationship is, you know, yay or nay. And then you keep on going for however long after that. I don't know, I've never made it past 3 months.
My longest relationship lasted 2 years. I realized after the first few months, you just run out of things to do with that person. You know, you've gone to the movies. You, when Astroworld did exist, you've gone to Astroworld. you know, you run out of things to do. You've walked around with each other at the mall. You've whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's like you want
to
read... Like,
and it just... It gets old. You don't want to go to the movies anymore. You don't want to go to the mall anymore. You just want to be with that person.
It's like your relationship has, like, a warranty, and you want to return it before the warranty expires.
I have a question for you guys. And this was my problem in the past, but, like, I just chilled out from guys in general. But, okay... I can remember whenever I attempted to have a relationship or try to, you know, talk to somebody and see if it really works, if it's been more than 3 days, like, what is it called when you're just like, who else, you know?
We're starting to see what's out there.
Well, no, it's just like, you feel like me, my problem was I could talk to somebody, it could be really cool, but it's not that who else is out there. It's just like, I can get I guess it's from past experiences, I can get, like, this picture in my head of something wrong, you know, happening.
Yeah.
Or something like, they would just mess it all up. And
no, that's your mind trying to find reasons why you shouldn't be in a relationship. That's
but
basically...
But it could be really good, you know, and I could just, something like that could pop up.
Well,
in my head.
Because you're a pessimist.
That's what basically...
I mean, I'm not saying you're a pessimist, but maybe because you're a pessimist. I don't know. I mean, that's sort of a, like...
Like, it feels like you're suffocating, and you need to find a reason why you shouldn't be in a relationship. I mean, that's
like,
what
I felt
you're
much better when I just like, out
yeah,
like
you're,
myself.
Well, I mean, then you should do that.
That's how I used to feel when, like, before I turned, like, full gay, and when I used to date girls, it used to be, like, you know...
Before you turned full gay?
Well, before I realized that I was gay,
oh, okay.
How's that better for
okay.
you?
Okay,
that,
yeah, well, much better.
Before the moment of enlightenment.
When I used to date girls, it used to be, like, I always felt uncomfortable, like, you know, this wasn't something for me, and I would always try to find reasons why... It wouldn't work out, and I would just come up with all these bizarre excuses and always end these relationships, and I don't know why I would always try to go back to them, you know, just trying to figure out if I was straight, gay, bisexual. It's just something that I was going through, but then when I realized that I was gay, I stopped thinking about all these reasons why I should, like, not stop try to get out of relationships, because I knew what I wanted, and I wanted a gay relationship, and that's what probably would work for me.
I don't know, maybe my stability just really sucked, you know?
Or Sean, maybe it's just that the two of you didn't click for whatever reason. Maybe it's because if it had been more of than a 3-day relationship, it wouldn't have been a good one.
Well, like, it was just, I was so used to like basically what he was used to, you know? Guys getting one thing out of you or what they want, and it's just like, I just didn't believe in it. I, you know, it still creeps up on me every day. You know, every time I try to think of it, being with somebody, it's just like after all the, you know, things that I've done and things I went through or whatever. And, you know, I guess I did it. I was willing, so it's not, you know. But it's like, I really lost faith in all that. Like, I can't see it. I could walk by down the street, you know, in anywhere where I live, and if I see two guys together or I see a happy couple, I'd be like, that's not real. I'd be like, you know, unless I've known that they've been together for years, but if I see it, I'd be like, yeah, he's doing something on the side, you know, or he's not happy.
Okay.
You know?
Do you feel pressure to be in a relationship? Do you feel like that's what is expected of you?
Huh?
Like, do you feel that I've got a question.
Society expects like you to be in a relationship,
or also, your family unit. How much of seeing your family affects what you're looking for in a relationship? You know, I come from a weird family. My parents are still married together. They were high school sweethearts. How many of you may have parents who are, you know, still together in the same couple, and you see that Ozzie and Harriet family relationship, and that's what you're kind of striving for, sort of thing.
Like,
what are the outside influences telling you what a relationship should be? Is it family? Is it society?
Well, it's definitely not family for me. You know, they're not happy, my parents. So it's just like, I don't know. I think with the couples I've seen and just the impression of everybody in general messing around one night things, you know, coming back from the club wasted, just looking a mess and bragging about the most smallest, you know, unimportant things. It's just so, what are you really looking for when you think of that?
Okay. Well, I'm 17 and I've never been in a relationship, but I've met guys and they're like way older than me. They're like 36, 35. I've dated them is because they were pretty hot. So that's why, if you're asking why I've dated them. But I've actually gone on dates and I'm actually kind of confused right now, because whenever we would go on dates, I would end it like in the middle because I would just did not feel comfortable.
Well, do you feel pressured that you need to find somebody? Like, because you see your parents, or do you see, like, your relatives in straight relationships, and that's what you're used to, but you're gay, and you want to find, like, the same-sex partner?
Well, I don't feel pressure, but at the same time, I do feel like, okay, I need somebody, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's to be expected.
I think one problem in the gay community is, like, you must be gay. And I think people feel that in order to be gay, there are certain things you must do, and one of them is date men. You know? And so they feel the need to be in a relationship at all times in order to, you know, qualify as gay. And so whether or not they really want a relationship, they keep trying them. You know, whether at that point in their life a relationship is really what they need, they keep on trying and trying and trying. And then once they're in a relationship, they're sitting there going, well, I'm in a relationship. I don't really want to be, but I need to be. And so they make excuses as to why it wouldn't work.
But doesn't that fly kind of in the face of, you know, what we say the general stereotypical thing is of gay men, is that basically we go out clubbing every night, we get drunk, we do drugs, and we sleep around. But then you're saying, but in the interim, we're really wanting a relationship?
Not a relationship. I'm saying, I think some people feel that in order to be gay, they must be, I guess, what you might call a practicing homosexual. They must... I think people don't see gay... You can't be gay unless you're actually in the act.
Or that you can pull around someone and say, you know, I tricked with this person last week, or, you know, I've been seeing this person for 3 weeks. That qualifies them as being gay.
Right. I mean, everyone expects gay people to actually do the deed, you know.
Put the sex in homosexuality.
Right, exactly. I mean... Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't really think that's my problem, but my problem is basically is that when we go on the date, I don't know how to act, you know what I mean? I don't know how to act in front of, you know, normal people, straight people, whatever. And it doesn't, I don't feel comfortable.
Normal.
Normal, exactly.
Well,
normal?
Well, you know, let's look at it from this point. When you say to the kind of guys that you date, basically you're talking about someone who is twice your age. And there are the different ideas of what they may be into and what you may not, and what you're into. And you may look at that, people who go out and see that, and the two of you walking together, you know, that's going to trigger different ideas with people. And depending on how old a person, you know, if someone is 35, 36, who looks maybe older than 35 or 36, you know, it may not be in the front of your mind, but the back of your mind may be thinking a lot of different things and overanalyzing how the appearance is. And, you know, that's one of the things of having that older standing, you know. If it was a straight couple, wouldn't look that much at that with an age difference. There's a lot more news and a lot more coverage on the potential of having someone who is that, you know, you have to look at it two ways. The person's twice your age. And especially considering what his ex was there, technically, he could be your father.
Yeah, well, I guess that's kind of true, because actually, it's my first time actually meeting people like me, like my age, you know? We're kind of like the same ages with some of these people over here. And it's, I'm still kind of finding my way. I really don't know what's going on in my head or what's, you know, what's the deal with me.
Now, because with some of the panels, how many of you have kind of started going with someone because they said the right things to you?
Well, yeah. And sometimes guys just want to be taken care of. Like,
yeah.
Like when they're young, especially, if you look for an older person, you would usually want them to take care of you, or, like, you know, just you grow up with experience, you know, okay, well, I dated this older guy, and, you know, at least now I know what to do in the future, and things like that.
Well, I mean, just the simple compliments. You know, like you're starting to go with someone, and, you know, you may have had those issues in your mind, going, I'm not attractive. And someone just comes up to you and keeps going,
yes.
You know, like how you were saying, you know, he kept saying, you know, you're so hot. You know, or someone just feeding your ego, and then you suddenly realize you're in something. Have you experienced that, especially, you know, with...
Well, I have.
That was my thing when I was with the older guy, but then I, you know, after hearing it so much, it got really old, and I realized I don't want to be carrying these guys' respirator when I'm like 30-something, you know?
My thing with the older guys were, like, all the guys that I met, they all wanted to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I'm 17, and I'm a virgin, so... I'm cool.
Kudos to you.
Lucky you.
What do you mean so cool, Sean?
Oh, never mind.
But now, like, I think...
Oh, go
that's
ahead.
Another
I guess
thing.
When we're young, we see things like, you know, we have our whole lives ahead of us, and why commit now? You know, these are our, like, best years, and we want to spend them having fun, you know, hopping around, basically.
You know, that's another thing. Youth of today, not even just gay youth. Youth of today...
Straight youth.
They just... they don't care about their precious secret anymore. I mean,
everybody
just gives it away.
Just give it away like
nothing. It's sad. You know, my cousins live in this small town called Lamarck. I was born there, you know, whatever, that's my hometown. There's areas of that town that is just so ghetto, and... One of the little boys in my cousin's neighborhood, he's like 4 or 5 years old, and he's already talking about how he's had sex and this. And when you're 4 or 5 years old, can you even have sex?
Well, it's just because
yeah. I mean,
my brother was caught at 4 or 5 with a neighbor's daughter.
They're exposed, like, today teenagers are exposed to sex when at such younger age than it used to be. Now they're going off and girls are getting pregnant at 13. And
well, like, I think the impression, I mean, do you think it's a family thing too, how you're raised? It's like, do you think if you don't get the right attention, or you don't, you know, just in general, it's like, I mean... I remember one thing. I got enough attention. I got all this. I had a good, you know, upbringing and all that. It kind of, you know, was kind of bad, but whatever. And it makes me laugh because I think about it now, and I'm wondering if this is how most, you know, gay youth are thinking. It's like, I was doing something with this guy, and it was when I first started, you know, and started meeting people. And, you know, the first, what he said was, oh, I love this. And I was like, popped my head up. I was like, you love me? You know, so it's just like, you wonder if, like, that's how they're thinking. They think they have to do that kind of stuff just to get, you know, recognition, you know, that they are somebody.
Well, that's part of the thing is that sometimes it's that ego stroke. that you get from hearing the compliments, that you hear this thing that, you know, some of you maybe you never heard it before. You know, you're growing up as a child, you never heard someone say love you, or, you know, show the affection, or give you a hug.
Yeah, I can see that. Sometimes it's all, they say that it's all the, like, all in the upbringing and stuff, but when they say, you know, shelter your children, do not expose them to things that will get their minds thinking, that just, like, you know, makes them even more curious and want to do all these things that they've never been exposed to.
We have the greatest, we have a good, well, not the great, we have a pretty good example of, you know, the nurture nature sort of thing with Travis.
Ding.
You know, his brother is actually acts more gay than he does, and he's straight.
Your brother.
It's true. Well, if you look at
identical twins, brought up the exact same.
Yeah, they're identical twins, and you know, if the two of them walked in there, you would swear his brother's the one who's the gay.
The first time I met his brother, I was like, wow, you're more homosexual than Travis.
Yeah. Because like I am. While I'm the homosexual of the two of us, and we are identical and had the exact same upbringing, I never got into the fashion and, you know, the culture and stuff like that.
Your brother just takes metrosexuality way too far.
Right. My nickname with these guys is Stray Boy because I'm, you know, the one walking around in jeans and a belt buckle and listening to George Strait and watching baseball and basketball and football and all those things that really confused me growing up because I thought, well, I can't be gay because TV says gays are this and I'm not that. So obviously,
again, we go to the stereotype.
Right. And, you know, that is the nature versus nurture that just, it obviously, it's not in your upbringing because, you know.
And if people think, you know, gays are these minting little limp-wristed people, I've got a rugby team I'd like to introduce them to.
Yeah, I was never even threatened with a gay bashing because, like, I was always the biggest kid in school. And so, you know, my brother was half an inch behind me, you know, and, like, everyone knew. We used to go, and when I was in high school, we'd go out to bars and, like, pick fights with the skinheads for fun. I mean, that was our idea of a good Friday. And everyone knew that, and so no one ever bothered me about being gay because they knew I wasn't, like, the prissy one.
Because you're so straight.
Right? Well, I mean, you know, this is...
Well, I mean, like, when I grew... Okay, I grew up with three sisters, and I was raised the same way they were, but somehow I turned out to be totally different from them. Like, I don't know what if it was my mom.
We all like guys.
But, like, I'm totally the black sheep of my family. I have, like, 22 cousins, and out of all of them, I am the only homosexual.
That's open.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm like, that is impossible how I can be the only gay person in my whole entire family.
It is impossible.
It'll take a while to discover. One of my cousins just recently came out.
I honestly, truly believe that homosexuality runs in the family. Because I'm gay. I have a cousin that's gay. Recently found out my mom is whatever she is. I don't know if she's a lesbian or bisexual. She's something, but, you know, it runs in the family. Every other gay person I know, they have at least one other person in their family that's gay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, but my mom used to tell me that her mother used to tell all of her kids that if they ever, don't ever turn gay on her, or if not, don't ever let me know. So, I guess they grew up with that thing, and they just sheltered whatever. If they ever had feelings for the same sex, they just sheltered them. And I'm sure they probably taught their kids, my cousins, the same thing. So, either...
I don't have anyone gay in my family.
Your brother's close enough.
Your brother's gay.
My brother is not gay.
Well, actually, you know, your brother's not gay. I know that for a fact.
We don't dish that kind of dirt here.
Right, my party.
But no.
Yeah, the party.
But, you know, so... The thing is, how many of you think that, you know, with the culture of today, where, you know, they say one out of two marriages are going to fail, and we know how, you know, gay relationships, look at Travis. How many of you think
that?
You're the one who says every 3 months.
Hey, that's two relationships.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't do relationships.
Three.
He uses his interior design. He uses interior design skills on boyfriends there. He changes the style every 3 months.
No, I've had three 3 month relationships.
We were talking about recent relationships. Tell us about your relationship that you had with one of my friends. Because that relationship was just, whoa.
Bizarre.
From the way it started until it ended, that relationship was just, wow.
What's really odd is looking back, like I said, I've had three-month relationships. And looking back over the past couple of years, I almost forget that one. It's almost like, oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
You know, we talk about it when we're all together. We joke around and we talk about it.
Oh, great, I'm the joke.
Well, no, you're not the joke. It's just that we all do. That relationship happened. I tend to forget that it happened. He tends to forget that it happens. Courtney tends to forget that it happens.
Right.
I don't know. That relationship was different.
Right. All of my relationships have tended to be a little different. The one before that was bizarre in, like, the amount of time we spent together. Like, you were talking about getting bored with the stuff you do together. That never really happened to us because we didn't do anything out of the ordinary. Like, we'd go grocery shopping together if one of us needed to go buy groceries. Or we'd go, you know, just stuff like that. It was almost like we lived together, except we didn't.
Okay, I can
like,
see that.
Like, he went home to his house every night, and I went home to mine. But then, when we weren't in school and we weren't at home, we were together doing stuff. And it was just a really interesting relationship. And then he went off to college, and kind of went crazy. But most of it was because he moved away. It was part of the reason. And a lot of it had to do with me going a little crazy for a short period in life. And that was part of the reason we broke up.
Short period.
But, no, it was a very short 4 month stint in my life when I decided to be like Mr. Wild and Crazy rather than Mr. Grown Up for a while. And he didn't deal too well with that.
Well, one thing it says, Travis, at the time you were a teenager, You
still am.
Yeah, I mean, you were 17. I mean, the
right.
One thing with Travis is you came out of the womb old, I think. I can relate to that because I've been accused of that when I was a younger age, I related more to older people and could talk and deal on a level with them. And you don't come across
right.
As an 18-year-old, I'm gonna give him a swelled head here. You don't have the intellect, and you don't have the political knowledge of a normal 18-year-old. You have a higher one.
That is why it's so hard for me to find a relationship. Because, I mean, I've been out since I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, and,
wow.
Yeah. So, I'm coming up in like 6 years now, and I've had three relationships. It's because I've always felt the need to date within my age range, yet date someone on the same... I really don't want to say mental level because that just sounds so
egotistical.
Egotistical, but you know, someone who I feel has the same.
You would have a battle of wits and
right,
interests.
Exactly, and it.
Then why the hell did you date the Republican?
Few and far between. He was not a Republican. Like why? Merlin, get in here. There was a rumor going around that I was dating a Republican. Not true.
Oh, so now we're, like, not allowed to date Republicans.
Well, he said...
Now when you're a member of the Houston area Black Democrats...
That's me, Mr. White Boy.
Part of whiter than white. I mean, you're any whiter...
I'm pretty tan.
If you were any whiter, we would call you Aryan.
Okay.
You're pretty white. You're kind of
relationships.
And we need to start wrapping up. A little
bit. You know, one of the things I think is really interesting is the youth today seem to be so focused on, and there seems to be pressure to have a relationship. I'm not sure 10 years ago, youth sitting around this table would have been so focused on having a relationship.
Oh, I think so.
And I think that's interesting.
You know, I for the longest time in my life, I was all throughout high school, I gotta have a relationship, because that's just who I was. When I am in a relationship, I'm a very monogamous person. I don't like cheating. I don't cheat. I've been cheated on twice, and let me tell you, it's the worst feeling in the world. But now, after all the crap that I've been through in different relationships, I don't care anymore.
That's our final thought. Again, this has been HATCH, where it stands for the Houston Area Teen Coalition of Homosexuals. We're a GLBTQ youth group for ages 14 to 20. If you're interested in reaching us, Brendan can give you the phone number right now.
Thanks. I'm actually not sure what the number is right now.
Give me just 1 second here. We can pull that on up.
Wow.
Seth, if we don't... 713-529-3590. Be sure to leave a detailed message.
You do have to leave a message first, and... Someone will, you know... your call just to make sure that you aren't some... right-wing televangelist here to save us all. And that number again, Jeremy?
Oh, Mark.
Hold on. They try not to... if you are... questioning your sexuality and you do not want your parents to know, they will not call your house and, you know, ruin, like, your...
One of fellow hatchling will call up and, you know, hi, this is John, and I go to high school with Mark, and I just need to contact about some homework or something like that.
There's anonymity. Because we don't want to accidentally expose
anonymity is very important to us at Hatch.
Yes.
The number is 713-529-3590. Or if you want to get on the internet, because, you know, your parents can check the phone records, but they don't know how to figure out your internet, it's hatchyouth.org.
Thank you, Chris.
That's how I found out the number. So, thank you, guys. And we'll see you on the first Saturday of next month. Binet is coming up. And let's put in a kind of a favorite we have here now. Kevin Cahoon and Doll.
I played with dolls.
right, Saturday night is all right once again. After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude is coming home to Saturday night / Sunday morning, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. Don't forget that starting April 22nd, you can find the entire After Hours crew back home on Saturday nights. It's all right. This is KPFT Houston.
I don't like the quality of that sometimes. But what do you expect when you're recording it in a hotel room? this is After Hours, and if you couldn't guess from that last CD we played, Saturday night we go back on April 22nd. We return home.
Hooray.
I wanted to put in the promo that I was going to go there. Coming home where we belong. But I figured that would be taken the wrong way. Song before that, we played Kevin Calhoun and Doll. This is After Hours. It's time now for Binet. We got Gigi. And I'm just going to push my button to red and let you go.
All right.
You were talking about being home. When I went to the gay and lesbian and all that march in 93 in Washington, and I got a button that says, I'm not only out of the closet, I'm in your living room with my feet up on the coffee table.
Good thought.
Well, tonight I've got a couple of things we're going to be going over. I went to Austin last weekend, well, last Thursday night, and got to see Annie Sprinkle live in a show called Exposed, Experiments in Love, Sex, Death, and Art.
So what were some of her experiments?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Basically, they just went through a lot of stuff. It was a lot of material.
I bet.
Everything from breast cancer to love to sex to porn to
she is fearless. I mean, she's fearless in terms of just, you know, what are the possibilities? What are the human possibilities?
Oh, yeah.
Let's bring it on.
And she did.
Fantastic.
It was an incredible show, and I'll go more into that a little later.
Yeah, because there's probably some people who don't even know who Annie Sprinkle is.
Oh, my.
Strange as that may seem.
I thought everybody heard about Annie Sprinkle. She had films going where she was having female orgasms, ejaculatory orgasms.
Right.
That were incredible.
And she started out in porn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and in sex industry.
Yeah, and she's now doing kind of performance art.
Yeah, well, she became really famous as a respected performance art artist. Yeah.
And basically, she and her lover put on one hell of a show.
I bet.
At one point, they were under the sheets with the film, little camcorder showing what they were doing under the sheets.
Multimedia.
So it was pretty hot. Also, we're going to talk a little bit tonight about the Radical Fairies. We're having a gathering coming up. It's going to be May 11th to the 14th, which is a Thursday through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants more information on that, as far as where it is and how to get tickets and all, go to www.ravenslayerleather.com/FAE.html. I know that's a mouthful.
Say that again, just in case somebody was writing
it's
slow.
www.ravenslayerleather, all one word, and that's ravenslayerleather.com /FAE.html.
Yeah.
And there we've got all the information about the gathering. And, oh, my, lions and tigers and bears.
All right.
We'll have all kinds of things going on at this gathering. Basically, we'll be doing the Trail to the Land of Fae. Mm-hmm. We'll have a non-talent show. And we'll have, of course, the Sex Temple going.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also have a stag hunt. And much, much more.
And that's, you talked about the stag hunt last time you were on the air.
Yeah. So it's going to be really awesome. We'll be running a community kitchen, but you have to sign up early if you want to be on that.
Mm-hmm.
And tickets are on sale now, $35 in advance through this month.
Which is really reasonable.
Yeah.
Very reasonable.
And then
reasonable.
It goes up to $50 on May 1st.
I mean, because you could easily spend $35 over 4 days in town.
I mean,
without even thinking about it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's coming up May 11th to the 14th. And we'll have a lot of activities going on. We even have hot and cold showers out there.
Oh, wow. Luxury.
So it's very nice. Permitted toilets, but... Hmm. But we have compost toilets. But you're out in nature. It is a camping experience, so you have to bring a tent and be prepared for the other things in nature that sting and bite.
Bugs and,
But other than that, it is really an awesome time.
And probably, you know, the weather is still so changeable at this time of the year. Make sure you bring light things and make sure you bring warm things.
And the other thing,
Make sure you have enough to sleep warm stuff for your, keep your feet warm, like that.
Yeah. But by May, it shouldn't be getting too chilly.
You never can tell.
You never know for sure.
You never can tell.
But we'll have the above the ground pool set up for the heat of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have cocktails out in the pool.
Wow. How elegant.
Cabana boys. We love those cabana boys.
There you go.
They're so darling. With their little aprons. And ooh, what's underneath? Ooh, baby. But, yeah, we get out there and it's, you know, the Radical Fairies. Why don't we talk about it a little bit and then we'll come back to Annie Sprinkle.
Sure.
Later. The Radical Fairies is really it started as a gay men's spiritual sexual group. And basically the Houston chapter, that's our focus. But we do allow women to come that are into the gay male or bi male spiritual and sexual aspects.
Okay.
And so we've got all kinds of fairies. I mean, we've got big guys. We've got me running around in my little petite outfit, and I'm going to be leather fairy this coming out. I've got quite the leather outfit going. And it's rather, it leaves everything, nothing to the imagination. Everything's out there when I'm wearing that.
All right.
But tell me, what has been some of your experiences in the Radical Fairies?
Well, it's been a long time. There's just been one thing and the other that's gotten in the way of me coming in any recent time. So most of my experiences are back in the prehistoric days. No, not prehistoric. I went to some gatherings in the early 90s, and then, you know, I knew a lot of people in the Radical Fairies through the years.
Yeah.
And it always, to me, represented just a whole lot of freedom of expression in the sense of... sort of mix and match when it came to gender signifiers, fires, in terms of just scrambling all that up in a really fun and interesting way, and a lot of connecting to the magical aspects of how to use your imagination and what sort of.
And how to be creative and expressive.
Yeah, and in terms of how in certain ritual and acting out of that and coming together with other people in an imaginative way allows you to see how forming those connections in a magical way, in an imaginative way, liberates things that... Not necessarily in a direct way, but it just gives you, frees you up to sort of be more comfortable with yourself, to be more comfortable with people, and not just with people like yourself. Then you become more accepting of suburbanites.
Diversity.
You know, you become more of accepting of people that aren't like you.
Yeah.
Because you're in a group of people that are loving and accepting of a lot of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the limit, so that diversity just proliferates and you find yourself just appreciating each person's uniqueness.
Yeah.
Whether, and, you know, maybe trying to help them to be more imaginative or just letting them be.
And one thing I like about the fairy space is that it is a safe environment for everyone.
Yes.
To come and express.
Yeah, the actual gatherings are extremely safe.
I mean, we go to great lengths to keep a very safe environment for everybody. And respect, you know, I think one of the central things to me about the Radical Fairies is the amount of respect and love that people have for each other.
Yes.
You know, it's like this, you almost do step out of time and definitely out of Texas, or we're not in Kansas anymore. I mean, one of the things we do in circle is have a heart circle at the gatherings, and that's where we have a talking stick. And I've got a wonderful talking stick. It's a two-headed phallus.
All right.
Carved out of oak.
Definitely got wood when you have that.
Oh, yes. I've had a lot of people stroke my woody, baby. But basically, you know, a lot of times when we sit down and talk to one another, you know, we're busy thinking what we're going to say, and when the other person's talking, the heart circle's really about being fully present with the person who's speaking.
And not having to protect an image.
And it's not a conversation.
You're just kind of being raw in a good way.
Sharing from the heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And sharing from the spirit.
Yeah.
And basically, sometimes we have a kind of central topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times it's quite open. Anybody can say whatever's in their heart to say.
Sure.
And it's amazing when you get a group of men together and you do a heart circle. The things that come out and the bonding that occurs and the connections. Because we are fully present with one another and we're fully attentive.
Yeah. Well, I think that attentive, because, you know, most people can talk at length about themselves.
Oh, yes.
But when you're in a group where people actually are putting their pause button in terms of me.
Yeah.
And for that time that the person has the talking stick, really listening. And really trying to find something in themselves that is helpful or supportive or just the energy towards that, if not words, but just we're with you.
Yeah.
We really want to see you develop. We want to see you fully become, you know, something like that. And but in the, like you said, really paying attention to where the other person's coming from.
And it's a lot of it is about honor and respect. a lot of times in modern society, we're going so fast.
And we want to have the snappy, impressive comeback.
Yeah.
Which is fun. It's fun to do. I'm not saying that isn't fun, but
yeah,
it's something gets lost if that's all we do.
Yeah. And this is a magical space.
Yes.
It's there's a place for everything.
So it's there's manifestation that actually comes out of the sharing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the magic.
Yeah. And for this fairy gathering, I'm going to be doing a performance piece on being a hermaphrodite.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So it's going to be pretty hot.
And that's not a performance just anyone could do.
Oh, no.
Takes a very unique person for that.
Oh, yes. It's going to be, I know when boys see my performance piece, a lot of them get a little nervous.
Sure.
But I tend to have a way of, but it is safe space, but I do have a way of kind of touching things that can be a little scary sometimes for a lot of men.
Yeah.
And also for women.
Mm-hmm.
But being a little bit of both, I kind of form the bridge between the genders.
Which is, you know, I hear so many stories about how, you know, that sometimes today, but especially in the past, there was like, they would immediately want to do corrective surgery and say, okay, well, you got to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And how something truly magical and honored down through the ages in different cultures was kind of in danger of really getting lost.
Yeah.
So if anything, you're sort of bringing that back to the surface and in a very service sort of way, going, okay, this is part of the magic of the world.
Well, in our modern society, hermaphrodite has been eradicated as a gender.
Yes.
You know, I was surgically reassigned at birth to be supposedly to be a male, but you know, I think it's pretty shallow when doctors think, oh, I can do a little cosmetic surgery throw in a few hormones and we'll have a male.
Well, and that the person's going to be different than who they really are.
But I know that I'm both.
Yes.
I've always known.
Yes.
Even before I was told, I always knew I wasn't male, I wasn't female. So anyway, I'm going to do a performance piece that's kind of centers in on some of these things.
Wonderful.
And so that's one of the things that'll be coming up at the fairy gathering. And I think I have to say that after seeing Annie Sprinkle, she inspired me in certain ways.
Well, one thing I think, I mean, this is kind of a little bit out of left field, but I think a lot of people tend to think, oh, if I'm a top, I'm better than if I'm a bottom, or if I'm like real butch, or I'm in the real masculine role, that's better.
Yeah.
If I'm in a male body, then I have to be.
Oh, no.
You know, and I think that that's one of the things that you really can explain and show to people is that maybe the best is when it's a balance.
Yeah.
It's a balance of those things.
I mean, I love
you honoring both aspects of yourself.
I love switching. I like being submissive at times, and I love being dom at times.
But the whole idea that somehow the masculine side of you is not better or worse than the female side of you.
No.
That they're both wonderful.
I mean, I had someone right before the show come up and say, you know, you are so well known throughout the pagan community.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can run a chainsaw all day long without breaking a nail. And I do it with painted nails.
That's a perfect way of saying it. Absolutely.
So I can get bitch and as bitch as most of the guys out there in a film kind of way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's bringing that balance.
There you go.
But tell me a little bit about some of the gatherings you've been to. What stood out for you? What was some of the special moments? Or I know for me, drumming just is magical.
Yeah, it was. I think in a way, it was. Well, it was. I don't know. It's because I mean the rituals were very important to me, and I really felt a lot of empowering I felt they were very empowering. And even though I know a lot about metaphysics and I've explored that a lot, it was a unique subset.
Yeah.
In that empowered me in a certain way, and that only the radical fairies do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is that there is some part of being gay,
yeah,
that is really outside of gender.
Yeah.
It's really outside of sex. Sex is important, but it's outside of sex.
Yeah.
And there's just a magical... There are magical aspects to being homosexual, to being gay,
mm-hmm,
that very rarely get directly addressed.
Yeah.
And I find that the rituals really, really satisfy that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part is just all the flirting and getting to know people and sharing experiences
and
getting laid. Yes, I mean, I had a lovely young monk, you know, climb into my tent, you know, one of the nights, and that was quite pleasant. And I think I shared before one time when there was one of the caretakers of the piece of property we were at out by Dripping Springs at that point had gay experiences in his youth and then suppressed all of that, and everybody went off for another event and I chose not to go, and it was just he and I there, and he re-explored and sort of woke... I helped him re-explore and open up that part of his life again.
Oh, cool.
So he got affected by the fact, just sort of the fact, you know, just the sort of synchronicity of the fairy gathering and he and I connecting, mm-hmm, sort of reawoke his something he had sort of shut down, and he was very glad of it. Cute redheaded guy.
Ah, well, one of the other things I like about fairy gatherings, mm-hmm, is that, you know, there's no pressure to do anything.
No.
You can take part of what's mm-hmm right for you.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 53 acres with lots of trails. You can go and have solitude if you want it during part of the time, or all the time if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can be in the thick of it all.
Mm-hmm. But it does, I mean, to me, it really does. The important thing, though, is it really does address the specialness of being gay.
Yeah.
And like I said,
and some of the magic
outside of sex or anything, mm-hmm, just that there is some special blessing.
Yeah.
I mean, straight people have special blessings they get. Every sexuality, every type of person, every ethnic group of people has certain blessings, certain gifts that they have. And this is the one thing
that
really, really addresses those special blessings of being...
It's the fae. It's the fairy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And believe me, the fairies come out there.
But where else do you actually get that in that pure of a form?
Yeah. And, you know, the intent is there to bring that out.
Exactly.
It's like, and I've been to...
Because I think every gay person, no matter how repressed, has had some flash, some glimmer, some moment, and maybe full-time thing of just how beautiful and rich and wonderful it is being gay.
Yeah. And you know, while we do have a lot of sex going on...
Oh, absolutely.
There's also
a lot of...
We have some people that come that aren't into sex.
Mm-hmm. But
and
I mean,
that's
that,
cool.
But that whole thing of...
But the other side of it...
That whole mistake of that sex is what makes you gay.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know, that sex is part of being gay, but it's not actually the essence of gayness.
Well, you can be a virgin and still be
gay. Exactly. And still have that essence. Yes,
uh-huh.
Exactly.
But the thing I wanted to bring out is the sense of art
and the sense of beauty.
Oh, yeah.
The Greeks recognized it.
Oh, yeah.
And especially in the male form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Michelangelo's David, Donatello's David. Some of that was Donatello came later and kind of did a...
And making an uplifted environment.
But sometimes just with male nudity,
absolutely,
there is this beauty.
But it's about that proportions. They had this whole thing about proportions and the golden mean and, you know, okay, let's make the perfect proportion of temple to display this perfect figure in. So it started with the figure, but it was this whole, let's create a setting that is the perfect setting to worship and adore this form.
Yeah. And, you know, I run the Sacred Sex Temple, or Temple of Ishtar, Temple of Aphrodite, whatever you want to call it. There's been many of them throughout the eons.
Yes.
But one of the things in ancient times, people came to the temple not only to worship, but to be worshipped.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that Radical Fairies has kind of captured in spirit, is that we're all here to be worshipped and to worship each other.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the deities.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to worship. I worship nature. I worship,
and you can definitely, fully do that at a fairy gathering on all the levels.
Oh yes, and so a part of it all is kind of getting in touch. And I think partly, too, I like the history of the Radical Fairies.
Yes.
With where Harry Hay came from.
Yes, yes.
The whole Medicine Society, he was too out there for them, so he got booted, though he helped start it.
Yeah.
And so he started something that did become, I think, something even greater than he. That he started a movement. He started a kind of spiritual, sexual space and created this kind of, I hate to use the word, but kind of blueprint of where it can go. And then we redefine and recreate that space every time we get together.
Absolutely. You know, and have you heard Devendra Banhart? He's a folk singer.
You know, names don't stick with.
Devendra Banhart is this young folk singer that's getting very popular, but he's very much an underground figure. And he dresses in gender neutral. Well,
or
no, just
bender?
Flamboyant. Bendant. I mean, bender. I saw him perform here about 6 months ago, and his entire band, it's almost impossible to tell who's straight and who's gay.
Yeah.
And he sort of is very kind of, you know, not taking a position. He's very androgynous.
I love androgyny.
And I talked to his band and him quite a bit, and they are totally devotees of the Cockettes.
Oh, okay.
They draw a lot of their inspiration from the Cockettes, who are very much in the tradition of Radical Fairies.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of crossover historically between those two groups.
Yeah.
But he's very much doing that in the public marketplace and getting popularity, selling a lot of records. And there was one point during the concert, and this is a little bit off subject, but one point during the concert where he said, "Who wants to come up and sing a song?"
Oh, wow.
And he pointed to this woman in the audience, and she came up, and she played a thing, and she didn't have lyrics to it. And he just, the whole band just gave her, I mean, how many times do you see, like, egotistical musicians, and that's, they're so full of ego, and they're so wonderful, but they all completely stopped, completely put the attention on her, totally appreciated her. She just had this shining moment. Everybody in the place went wild and loved it.
Oh, yeah.
And then they went back to the regular thing. But how many... that's, to me, very much in the spirit of the Radical Fairies as well.
Yeah.
That it's not just us up here performing. That this is a whole group energy that we're creating magic here, and it's by our playfulness and with all of these images and all of these signifiers that we're going to be, you know, amuse each other and trick each other into having a lot of fun.
The other thing I do with the Radical Fairies, because I'm kind of one of the organizers that helps put this together. One of the things I like to do is have people come and do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
Performance pieces or come and play music, read poetry. You know, I don't want this to be Gigi's event. I want it to be our event.
Yes.
And I want everybody to play a part in putting something in. You know, it's my belief that we each can add our special part and create something that's truly a unique experience for all of us.
And it doesn't happen any other way.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the essence of it.
And so, and I even have on the website, you know, if you want to do a piece, write to me, tell me what you want to do, when you want to do it, we'll put you on the schedule.
Because, I mean, I used to go to also the Angels.
Oh, I'm getting the wrap-up.
Not wrap-up sign.
Oh, we need to do the station identification.
You're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on listener sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
With Gigi and I were off in our own little world. We didn't even know Chris was out there anymore.
I had a call and I was talking with him, and it's like I looked at the clock and go, "Better get this in."
Yes,
we were off in fairyland.
Well, you know, it's like I get out there and it's like I don't want to leave. Unfortunately, I go early to set up, and then I stay a day after to tear down and pack up. And it's like, you know, on Sunday, as everybody's packing up and taking off, it's always a little sad because, you know, I know it's a temporary community, but
going back to the, in quotes, real world.
Yeah, the mundania. It's like, but I always love to feel the energy after everybody's left. Because it's still there. You can feel it in the land. You can feel it.
And everybody does take it out into their everyday life.
Yeah. And, you know, I know it's a temporary community.
And maybe everybody has more patience and doesn't want to just sort of kill the next person that cuts in front of them in traffic or whatever, you know.
But the other thing I also realize is that we keep having more gatherings.
There you go.
And so each time it's a little different because we get different mixes of people.
That's true, because there was a point where it was in danger of really dying out.
Yeah.
The whole lineage had kind of fallen apart there with, you know, death and whatever.
Yeah. But basically, the gatherings are just such a recharge.
Great.
It's like when you get really kind of sick of the daily grind, come to a fairy gathering.
Especially if you kind of have a really playful, creative personality, or if you want to develop that in yourself. If you feel like, well, it's something I'd like to explore, even if you don't like feel like, oh, well, that's what I do every day, but I want to explore that part of myself and develop that side of myself, it's a good place to come and see what fits for you.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I love experimental works.
There you go.
You know, I love people that it takes a lot of guts to get up there and do something kind of off the cuff and very different, but I love it.
And especially, say, like someone who is into the idea of gender bending, but they're not really, really wanting to go into drag per se, in terms of transgender or transsexual kind of thing, but it's more like they want to play with all those images. But it's not the same thing as serious drag, and that's an art form into itself.
Yeah. And we do get some drag queens.
exactly.
And have some good drag out there.
But what I'm saying, though, it's a little more free form in terms of the original definition or the original sort of paradigm of Radical Fairies of just, you know, find your own mix, find your own, you know.
And the other thing I have to speak to is the drum circle.
Mm-hmm.
The drumming is, well, picture this, sitting by a bonfire
mm-hmm.
with people drumming this tribal beat mm-hmm. and naked men dancing around the fire. Mm-hmm. It is so awesome.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And just, you know, the energy just, it kind of gets its own movement. Sometimes it gets very frenzied, and other times mm-hmm. it's very seductive, and other mm-hmm. times it's just this beautiful...
Well, I'm sure it's in tune with wherever the moon is,
yeah.
and whatever the you know, nature spirits are
yeah.
bringing in and all that, you know?
And it's just incredible to hear the drumming. It's like the, well, I had someone, well, I'm into the pagan thing big time,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like, I took a drumming class. I'm not good at drumming.
I'm not great at it either.
I do drum every once in a while, mm-hmm. but I am a total offbeat. but the thing that they brought out in this class was that the drum, a lot of times, drummers use what's called the heartbeat
yeah,
drum.
Exactly.
Drumming.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And so you get this kind of rhythm going, mm-hmm. and it's like almost the heartbeat of the earth.
Exactly.
Speaking to you.
Exactly.
And it does speak without words. It speaks mm-hmm. with sound
mm-hmm.
and with movement. And vibration, and it's really awesome.
yeah, yeah, and the dancers do give themselves over to that.
Yeah, oh, I do. Yeah. I'm more of the dancer type. I get up and, mm-hmm. ooh, baby.
yeah.
And I dance totally nude, and it's like, oh, when I get really frenzied, I'm wiggling all over the place.
if it wiggles, it's wiggling, huh?
Oh, yeah. oh, it gets going. but why don't we take a music break? And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Radical Fairies, and then
Randy's
a little more about
Annie
Sprinkle.
Annie Fanny.
A stunning vision, painted eyes with such precision, longer legs than any girl I know. Fishing down the old Kent Road with her hips on overload, making sure the loneliness don't show. She was never here, or as long as I remember, she was never of her gender category. Never heed. Though the boys at school were cruel, you would have to be a fool not to see that she was never. Jody, she was Celtic Queen, who the boys were such a piece, deep inside a heart that fell aflame. What if he should realize, break a heart or black her eyes? Things are so important for a girl to know. She was never here. Or as long as I remember, she was never of her gender categorically. She was never here. Though this world can be so cruel, you would have to be a fool not to see. And the government says you no longer exist. It's a kick in the eye. It's the final twist of the surgeon's knife. Welcome to my glamorous life. Love me for who I am. Turn
Somerville, Someday We'll Be Together. And before that was Boy George, She Was Never He.
There you go.
Ah.
I don't know, for some reason the song hit me for a reason to play during this show. I don't know why, but...
I do love that song.
Yeah.
This is After Hours, and we're back with Gigi.
Yes.
And the Bi-Net Show.
Yeah, and we're talking about Radical Fairies and Annie Sprinkle tonight. What a combination. for those just tuning in, anyone that wants information about the Radical Fairy Gathering coming up on May 11th to the 14th, go to www.ravenslayerleather.com/FAE.html. Or if that's too much to remember, email me at buyhouse@houston.rr.com and I can send you the link.
There you go.
One of the things I'd like to bring out about the fairy gatherings that really gets magical is, especially at night, when we light all the tea candles all over the woods.
Mm.
It's like fairy lights all over. Mm. We light, I go through hundreds of them each gathering. Mm-hmm. Hundreds and hundreds. But it is so gorgeous at night to see the fairy trail lit up and see the sacred sex temple lit up with all these tea candles going. Mm. I mean, we must have at any given time 150 tea lights going. It's incredible.
Wonderful.
And it's, you know, it's just it's creating a space to where we can become explorative, experimental, where we can see where our spirits can fly.
There you go.
And see where what we can become. You know, we are all kind of in the works of becoming ourselves.
Yeah.
At least that's part of how I see life.
Oh, yeah. No, I think, in fact, I go to a Wednesday night poetry reading at Helios.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday, and there was this one sort of wonderful young woman who always sits on the floor with a mic in her hand, and she always reads these poems about, you know, whoever broke her heart lately, and sort of the betrayal and heartbreak and everything, you know. And I was thinking about, you know, poems that I wrote similar to that at that age, and how now, looking back, I cherish all those heartbreakers and all of that experience in my life that's brought me to this place.
Yeah.
And just every disappointment that encouraged me to grow. But the point of this, of me talking about that, was it really made me realize how living life is what transforms life.
Yeah.
That if you hold back from life, and if you keep everything sort of in a tight little bundle, and rather than just whenever whatever experience comes up sort of in a safe way, giving yourself to it, that it's the actual living of life that has transformed my life and brought me to this place of relative contentment that I inhabit now, and it's very open and very compassionate and very just inclusive in terms of appreciating people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's living life that has transformed me into a much more generous person in terms of my attention and my support and my acceptance of people and everything.
And to quote an old movie from long ago, Harold and Maude, if you don't live life, you'll have nothing to talk about in the boys' locker room.
That's true. There was one time I was on the Lakota Reservation, and we had gone on a buffalo hunt, and we were helping slaughter the buffalo.
Oh, my.
Which was, you know, not a lot of people have had that experience.
Nah.
And I was talking to the medicine man. He says, you know, we could have this done very quickly, but now everybody has a really good story to tell when they go home.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what a wonderful way for him to look at that. Mm-hmm. It's true. And it was true. I mean, you know.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there is, well, one of the things I've always kind of admired is a good storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
You know, someone that can really tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
There's an art to it.
Oh, yeah.
The thing I notice about most storytellers is these are people that live life to the fullest.
Yeah.
So they have a story to tell.
Yeah. I went to a sweat lodge earlier this evening, and I really felt my father, who has passed away, but I really felt my father in the lodge.
Yeah.
And this is, again, off the point a little bit, but he used to have this funny thing that when we were, we'd go drive to California or go on some long trip, because he was in the service, so every now and then we'd drive to San Diego or whatever and be there for a period of time. But he would go, "What's that in the road? A head?" You know, he'd look and then he'd say head. It was like the old joke, like, oh, you know. But it made me think about how that's almost like a little performance piece, and it's almost like a little poem. And it was one of the, and when I thought about it, maybe it's one of the first things that made me realize that just there's, that's just a couple of words, but just how you say it and the intonation,
oh yeah,
and the whole way you phrase it and the humor you put it across with, how much he entertained us with just playing with his voice
and
stimulating our imagination with just those very few words. And that planted something in me as a poet and a storyteller. And I just was so thankful to his, you know, use of his voice and his humor.
Oh, yes. And I do want to say this about the fairy gatherings.
Yes, yes.
It is for people, you do have to be 18 or older, but we have people all ages from 18 on up.
Wonderful.
I know that a lot of times at the bars, you know, it gets very ageist and very, you know, focused in on, you know.
Whatever the latest look is that decade.
Yeah. That's one of the things I love about the fairy gatherings is that it frees you up to become whatever you want to be and to explore where you want to explore. And to bring out whatever's in your heart, to bring out.
That's right.
And to share and to kind of commune with one another. But I think of all the, you know, I've done many different alternative community gatherings. And I think one of the things that really stands out for me is some of the creativity that comes out at the fairy gatherings. Well, the bi gatherings too, but bis know how to do it really good. But the radical fairies, there is this kind of
it's a very specific thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's wonderful when there's the whole big gathering of everybody coming together. You know, like at a CMA thing or one of the magical council things. But then every now and then, it's really nice to get off with your very specific affinity group.
Yeah.
And just concentrate on that for a period.
And for those that aren't sure if they're quite up to coming to a full-blown radical fairy gathering yet, if you email me, I am having a Houston gathering at my house next Friday night. Haven't posted it yet. But
and where what part of town is that, or what?
It's in Spring Branch.
In Spring. Okay.
Yes. And just email me at byhouse@houston.rr.com, and I can send you information on how to get there.
Cool.
But we're going to do a special night. I got finally found a new needle for my record player. And so we're going to have a Motown night.
Oh, my word.
I'm going to get out the vinyl.
Oh, gee. Gee.
And so we'll be pulling out some Motown hits and doing the Motown thing.
That'll be fun.
But
Among other things, it'll be a potluck dinner, and we'll be just celebrating. And so if you want to kind of get your feet wet gradually, come join us for Motown night.
Cool.
With the Houston Radical Fairies. And then if that floats your boat, then come to the big Radical Fairy Gathering.
There we go.
Well, I'd like to refocus back on Annie Sprinkle, because these two topics are semi-related, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
She
knows no boundaries.
Oh, yes.
I mean, except respecting boundaries, but yeah. I mean, but in terms of exploring,
oh, yeah.
She knows no boundaries.
She gets up on stage and uses what's that device called? Speculum.
Right.
To open herself up and invites the audience to come look at her cervix.
Yeah.
I mean,
wow. That's open. That's sharing.
Oh, yes.
In the most real sense.
Yes. So in many ways, I have been inspired to incorporate a few new things to some of my performance pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, I think the other thing is this whole thing I've been kind of looking at all my life as being a hermaphrodite. I want to express that in some new art forms.
Mm.
Performance art.
Sure,
forms.
Sure.
And so this is something that, you know, like I say, I kind of wanted to bring Annie Sprinkle into this because she's kind of inspired me to bring about this first showing of a hermaphrodite show.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And it's not for the timid.
No.
But come be brave.
It's educational.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it will be educational.
A public service announcement.
There will be elements to this performance piece that probably most people have never seen before.
Wow.
So it should be quite a bit. But
challenging.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, well, just this whole, I love this title of her last show, Exposed, Experiments in Love, Sex, Death, and Art.
Wow.
You know.
That covers it.
That covers it.
Mm-hmm. You know what I was thinking about, too, is her longevity as a performance artist.
Oh,
she's
yes.
been at this for, what, 25 years?
Yeah, since the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, the late 70s at least.
Early
Mid
70s.
Yeah, that long?
Yeah.
Well, I think in terms of her roots in the porn industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think she started more tending towards the performance in the, as late, late 70s or
yeah.
in the 80s.
Uh-huh. But, you know, one of the things she did in this performance piece was she had the doctors, quote doctors,
mm-hmm.
go around in their little white lab coats and have everybody write down information. You know, it could be a word, it could be a phrase, but whatever came to mind on all these four topics, love, sex, death, and art.
Wow. And I'm sure there was quite a variety
oh, yeah.
of responses.
And then they incorporated that as part of the show.
Wow.
And she read off. She took breaks here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And like at one break, she'd read off what people had written about love.
Mm-hmm.
And then about sex.
Wow.
At another point. And then about death at another point.
Mm-hmm.
And then about art.
Hmm.
And so it's really a powerful show.
Yeah, so it was it really brought together the whole vision.
Yeah. And I think part of it, too, she was kind of, I mean, part of what she did was she showed some film strips from her porn days
mm-hmm.
and from some of her other performances mm-hmm. that she's done and kind of incorporated all of this together. They're working on a project that's it's a 7-year project in response to the gay marriage issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they got married in New York. I believe it's New York. his mouth, mm-hmm. as the dizzy brain's remembering, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the women that showed up for the wedding came and protested and was very anti-marriage for everybody.
Wow.
So, but even she was invited in to be part of the ceremony.
Sure.
So it was really great.
You gotta respect somebody who's just against marriage, period.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, it's like, and that's what I think is kind of at the spirit of the radical fairies.
Yeah.
Whatever you bring in, we're going to celebrate it with you.
Yeah.
As long as we all, you know, irreverent to the space.
Well, I mean, because I'm sort of that way, too, in the sense of I can sort of vaguely understand why people want to get married. Personally, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I certainly think we should have the right to get married.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just not something, even if I was heterosexual, that I would even necessarily think I would want to do.
So I'm bisexual, and I've never wanted to be married.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's again, but it should be a choice. It should be an option for the people that are that weird.
Or at least if I am married, it's always been open marriage or a kind of poly thing. Yeah. I'm just built that way.
Well, and sure, and all the legal rights and everything, but, you know.
But
anyway, Annie Sprinkle.
Oh, yes.
You know, one thing, I've never seen her.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I've met her, but I've never seen her perform. But one of the things that, in thinking about, I've known lots of people who have seen her through the years.
Yeah.
There is not a single person that I know who has seen her performance that didn't come away with a really deep respect for her, and a lot of them came away not expecting one thing and coming away really impressed with and deeply affected by the depth and the power and the truth of what she has mm-hmm. to say. And it wasn't just some sort of cutesy, titillating performance.
Right.
You know, that like, tee-hee-hee, you know, but it was really like a major, it affected them in some major way.
I mean,
it she's a powerful performer. She's not just some little cabaret act.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things Annie Sprinkle does is she kind of brings in all our modern-day myths mm-hmm. and taboos about sexuality, and one by one kind of chisels them apart.
Because she's so real.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's like, they need to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these
mm-hmm.
things are inhibiting.
And she must be just fearless.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Yes. And she just has a way about her that's amazing.
Yeah.
I was so glad to finally get to see her perform. I've been wanting to all my life.
And you know, and I think one thing that I've always loved about is that she just has this cheerfulness.
Oh, yes.
She just seems like she enjoys the heck out of herself.
I think she's got some fae in her.
Yeah. She loves life.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like once, you know, I keep coming back to this, you know, the radical fairies and Annie Sprinkle, they seem like very different things, but I think at the heart of it, if she had been born male, I think she would have been a radical fairy.
Highly developed sense of the absurd.
Oh, yes.
And just a willingness to be serious when you need to be serious, and a willingness to be silly when you need to be silly.
Uh-huh. And so this whole concept of, well, you know, we live in such a sexually repressed society mm-hmm. anyway, you know, from the time we first start touching ourselves.
And emotionally repressed.
Yeah.
And they're so tied up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it shows like this that all of a sudden it kind of opens a door for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think
we don't have to be this way.
And I think especially with her, and again with the fairies, but I mean, especially with her, that whole thing of mm-hmm. like, don't dare tell the truth too often, or the whole, mm-hmm. everything will come apart at the seams.
Yeah.
And that may be true of some of the more awful things in life, that the truth might, maybe would shatter some of them, but some of that needs to be shattered.
Oh, yeah.
And, but we are so, I mean, we're really trained to be very careful not to tell too much of the truth to anyone.
Well, one of the things that kind of came...
And especially our own truth.
Comes to mind to me, I mean, I did... my undergrad in philosophy, and I studied a lot on ancient religions and ancient civilizations, and you know, in a lot of these classes, they went through not just regular society, but also sexual.
Yes, absolutely.
Norms.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing the diversity throughout time. And how strange it is that we have the taboos that we have in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so
Well,
bizarre.
yeah.
You know, it's
well.
And I took a couple of classes in anthropology.
Well, it seems to me that all of the longing and all of the urge towards diversity never goes away. But when it becomes taboo and you can't talk about it and you can't be truthful about it, it becomes very dark. It becomes very poisoned. It becomes very twisted, and it comes out as abuse, and it comes out as really people harming each other.
Yeah.
Rather than it being brought to the light, it really being played through that honesty, and so that it finds a really free, beautiful expression rather than something to be ashamed of.
Right. Well, you know, I'm into the BDSM thing. And I'm also into, well, a lot of different things.
But that I don't think that's like even dark.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I think that's very playful. And,
oh, yeah,
and,
definitely.
And it's I mean, it's scary, but it's
seen as dark, though.
But it's, that's, yeah, well, that's amateurs.
But what I was getting to on this is that, and I think this happens with the radical fairies, is that we reach what the ancient Greeks called catharsis.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, joyful, always.
Yeah. Well, catharsis goes even deeper. It's like an ancient Greek theater. The audience wasn't passive like in modern theater.
Right, right.
They would get down during the Greek tragedies and pound the floor. They'd pull their hair out. They'd scream and wail. And I mean, it was a major thing.
Sure.
But what it served was it gave people an outlet to explore some of the darker feelings and the darker side of our existence and to bring that out and let it come out in a healthy, safe way. And I think when you suppress, eventually it's going to come out somehow.
Well, I guess what I meant more was more it'll come out twisted, rather maybe
not
as dark.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, like I said, it comes out as harm rather than...
Well, when you repress it, then all of a sudden it will eventually come out, and it won't be in a good way. It'll be destructive.
Right.
But through the process of catharsis, we can channel that energy and let it come out in constructive ways.
Exactly.
And in healthy ways. And so I think that being a part of things like Annie Sprinkle and being part of the Radical Fairies and being part of some of the other alternative communities, it allows us an outlet.
You know, I
a way to reach catharsis.
I was speaking the other day to a young friend who's an artist.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's got beautiful long hair, so he's a young man who doesn't mind presenting himself as beautiful.
Yeah,
and very thoughtful. But he was talking about how he ran across some things he wrote right when he was pubescent, all about that are just violent, about shooting people and blowing up babies and all stuff. And it sort of shocked him that he had written that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said, well, you know, hormonal times and everything. And we would start talking about violence.
Yeah.
and, you know, video games and whatever, and I was saying that the only place that I never was interested in guns, I never was interested in violence per se. Yeah. I mean, I never drew battle scenes where everything blows up, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that's
terrible.
I've
never been there either. But
I said the only places I've really explored my violence, whatever violence is in my personality, was through sex.
Yeah.
You know, in the periods of my life where I really liked, you know, okay, let's get together and just sort of bounce each other off the walls and sort of a free form, just really sort of rough, you know, tumble, mm-hmm. you know, slam it, you know, sort of like slam dancing in bed,
yeah.
kind of things, and just really seeing the limits of the body. And it was, in a way, very violent, but it was very loving and very much part of just, you know, I want to eat you alive.
Well, it sounds like the
it's
word.
It's very passionate.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the word I think you're looking for is passion.
Yeah, but it was more than that. I mean, it was really like...
I had a girlfriend once from Brazil, and Latin Americans, or at least some, mm-hmm. many, get into very passionate lovemaking.
But I mean, but there was a sense of almost wrestling to it. I mean, in the sense of like, let's try to overpower each other. Let's come at each other full force and see where this struggle takes us.
This wasn't so much that wrestling, but mm-hmm. oftentimes when we would make love, she would use her nails.
Oh,
I would
sure.
be marked
yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
next
yeah.
day.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
There would be bites.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was intense.
Well, I remember there was this one friend that I had run into him at an after-hours club, and he sort of was on his knees, shall we say, and things got carried away, and every now and then I'd sort of like pick his head up by his hair and just sort of backhand him back and forth, and then things would proceed. But it was very much, we were really following an energy and having fun with it.
Yeah.
And then next time I saw him walking down Castro Street, he had a black eye. And I was like, oh, no. And he went, oh, yes. And he said, but it didn't hurt, and it was just really worth it. And I've gotten so much mileage out of it. And we both died laughing because we had been very much there together. And there really wasn't any abuse to it. It was just, you know, it was
consensual.
It was a love tap. You know, battle scar. Mm. But like you said, he got so much mileage out of it.
I mean, it's abusive when it's not consensual.
Right, right.
When it presses those boundaries and all of a sudden someone's wanting
it. And
to
tell the truth, it doesn't take much to give you a black eye. It's not brutal, you know.
No, no. But,
and it just inspired him to greater heights of passion.
Oh, yes. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I've experienced many different forms of lovemaking.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes soft and tender.
Oh, absolutely,
cuddly.
Absolutely.
Each has something to speak for itself.
I once had an orgasm, and I think we've even talked about this before, by just kissing. No body rubbing. We weren't even rubbing up against each other. I had an orgasm just from kissing my boyfriend.
Oh, yes.
You know, so, you know,
I've been there.
Whatever is appropriate in any given situation has always been my theory.
Oh, yes.
Whatever takes you there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's probably getting time to wrap up. Did y'all have something else that y'all wanted to get to?
Some last-minute announcements or whatever?
We still got 15 minutes.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know that there is...
Before we move on, let me say one last time the website to go to if you are interested in the fairy gathering.
Okay.
Which will be on May 11th to the 14th. Go to www.ravensleerleather.com/fae.html.
Okay, I know that there's some folks listening in right now because they're on their way back home. I want to give a nice shout out to my green eyed devil.
Ah.
It was really nice meeting him.
Wonderful.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. and all my good vibrations go out to him.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Beautiful.
And it's good to see him out and about.
Yeah.
Yeah. There
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, stay out.
There you go. There you go.
Exactly.
And one thing I wanted to add just a little bit, Dakota, to that story I was telling you.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking about how the only place I explored violence was through sex.
Yeah.
And I've never... I've only been in one fight, fist fight, in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean... You know what I mean? Maybe it kept me from... Exploring it that way kept me from, you know, being...
Who knows?
Yeah, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Anyway, so I just wanted to add that little coda.
Mm. Jimmy, do you have any more on your green-eyed monster?
No,
he's... Just he's happy.
All right, well, we'll do this if we're going to wrap up. I'll throw in some music, and we'll figure out what we're going to do for the little bit here.
Yes. Sounds good.
Yes. You got a special piece of music?
I just grabbed something.
Oh. That can be scary, because if it's Chris that's grabbing something, yes.
Yes.
Don't care, I could change me anyway. You don't own me.
That's right. Saturday night is all right once again. After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude is coming home for Saturday night / Sunday morning, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. So don't forget that starting April 22nd, you can find the entire After Hours crew back home on Saturday night. It's all right. This is KPFT Houston.
Yes, it is.
I don't think that CD burned right.
Well, yeah, that last part is just a little bit muddy, but...
There's also some popping in the middle of it.
Oh. I see what you mean.
But, yeah.
That's still... You put that together yourself this week.
Yeah. In the hotel room that I live in.
Whoa.
Uh-huh.
Some of my best work in a hotel room, and I only put it to CD, not DVD.
Mm.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
But, yeah. And using all free software.
Hey.
Stuff we're going to be using here at KPFT.
Oh. Well, good. Well, then it'll match and work. And
so, it's After Hours. If you didn't get anything from that song, remember on April... I don't know why. I kept saying May 22nd. I had to redo that. I don't know how many times because I started saying May 22nd. For some reason, it's sticking in my head.
Well, Friday, April the 21st will be our last Friday show. And
then Saturday, May 22nd will be
April.
I did it again. April 22nd, the day after, we do our first Saturday show again.
Yes.
So, you know, where we lost one when we changed to Fridays, we gained it on Saturdays.
So, on that Friday night, you will get to listen to...
It'll be Black on Black, because it's the third Friday.
And then Saturday...
Hopefully, send her the email.
Yes.
Since Saturday will be the fourth Saturday, we will just go into Mistress Max.
And then the next week will be the fifth Saturday, and although I have not heard back from J.D. Doyle, that should be another music show.
Unless we can't get Max, then we'll flop something around and figure something out.
Yeah, we sure will.
But so we're going home, and hopefully you will be joining us, and those MBBs out there, you hear that we're changing,
and it's so good to be going back to Saturday.
Yeah,
it just doesn't feel right doing After Hours on a Friday night.
I know, because we were on for 18 years.
Yeah,
on Saturday night, and well, a little less than 18 years, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the only part was getting me was actually when I was actually working, and then, you know, having to work the 8 hours and come in for to do a Friday. You know, my Saturdays were completely shot.
Yeah.
In that, so it's good. It's good to go back home to where people know that we're at.
Yeah. And if somebody can get the word to Stacy, we can have that crazy queen back on. Really?
Yes.
Where did you see him?
He was walking home from work. We just saw each other in passing.
Well, if you see each other in passing again, let him know.
I sure will.
Yeah. Because there are quite a few of our MBBs that really like the sound of Stacy's voice.
Mm,
so we.
Speaking of MBBs.
Yeah.
Did we get... I think we had a letter last week from Tigger
that
we didn't get to, actually.
I remember what it says here, because I read it last week.
Ooh.
His lovely little artwork he always has.
I know, he's great.
he was talking about his advocate. He had a copy of the advocate that was held for some reason and couldn't figure out why. He read through it, couldn't find anything too controversial, but then again said sometimes they censor Reader's Digest.
Yeah, that's right. We were just talking about that out in the lobby a little while ago, and if anything shows, it doesn't get through anymore.
Yeah, but, you know...
I know, the Advocate, nothing's...
Yeah, what did they show from the Reader's Digest?
Perhaps, you know, there was an article that was not looking at the prison system too kindly, you know.
Well, the Reader's Digest, must think you're probably fine as a little eye for the little blue pill. he talks about a Holocaust memorial going over in Germany that is going to actually put him there for the gay victims of the Holocaust.
Wow.
It says it saddens that our history books have left out that particular group of victims out of the discussion of World War II. He goes, you know, how many people never heard there's more than just Jews and the Poles in the gas chambers? You know, I've got a story on that one. Is, you know, when Schindler's List came out on broadcast TV the first time.
Yeah.
And my father was, in the way he was at that time, made a comment, because my family is Polish in descent, and made a comment of showing all the people there, and he said, well, what do you think about this? What are your emotions seeing all this? And I replied back going that 9 million people were killed, 6 million were Jewish. That means 3 million weren't.
Mm-hmm.
That means one out of three, every third person in there should be wearing a triangle, not a Star of David. And in Schindler's List, everyone was wearing the Star of David.
Oh.
And I pointed that out, the fact. And it's not just the gays, you know, the gypsies, the Roman Catholics, the politicians, the political dissenters, all had their own triangles.
That's right.
And the fact that you... Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, the Holocaust Museum here in Houston does do a broad range. They even have a thing they're showing you the different triangles in their display. As far as a memorial, I'll tell you this, St. Maximilian Kolbe Catholic Church. It's up in Northwest Harris County. It's off. It's on West Road between the Beltway and Jones Road. St. Maximilian Kolbe was killed in the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And in their day chapel, there is a stained glass memorial to the Holocaust. And in it is, you know, his number. And it has all the different triangles, including... pink triangles.
Good.
Oh, cool. Good.
And that's something that, you know, a Catholic church, you know, having something of the gay community.
You just wouldn't expect to see it there.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, we're out of time now.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some of the other stuff on here.
Lee DiBala is sitting right behind me, waiting in the wings, ready to go.
And it ain't much. Guess what, Lee? Remember, two more weeks. You got
two more weeks, and you're not going to see us anymore.
What?
We're going back to Saturday night.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
How come?
Hey.
That's the reason, huh?
After hours is Saturday night.
We don't care about the... No offense, Lee, but we don't care about the reason we're going home.
Okay.
We're going home.
We're going home where we started. Yeah.
Huh?
I don't know yet.
I'm not sure. Because there's something going to be in there from 2 to 4 because...
because then
Sandy said he's going to 2 a.m.
midnight to 2, and then another show from 2 to 4.
And who then knows? You. Or so we think.
Or so we think.
Yeah.
This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Now this.
On Friday, May 19th at 7 p.m., the National Black United Front Houston chapter will host a community forum at The Shape Community Center, 3815 Live Oak. The event is entitled The X Factor and will focus on Malcolm's X influence in three areas: the Southern Freedom Movement, the continent of Africa, and hip-hop. A unique panel of elders active during Malcolm's life and young people of today will assess the influence of his ideas and their relevance today. Proceeds of this event benefit the NBUF Building Fund and programs. Again, that's Friday, May 19th at 7 p.m. at the Shape Community Center, 3815 Live Oak. This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.